We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance and the prayer. Will you please stand?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mike, if you will.
Our God, we thank you for the gift of life and your many blessings that you give us. As we come this morning to conduct the public's business, we ask that you keep us mindful of your presence. We ask that you guide us and give us wisdom and understanding. Be with the people for whom we work. Be with our men and women who protect our right to live and work in a free country. Keep them safe, and we pray for peace. In your son's name we pray. Amen.
Again, good morning. We'll begin with the communications.
Okay. First would be approved travel and training, approve one care facility personnel action, cancel maintenance bonds for Allen Estates Section 2A and 2B, grant special hauling permits to Welsh Excavating, A-Storn Hauling and Rigging, W.G. Stang, and under Environmental Services, approve oversized reimbursement, approve the hire of a IS manager, approve reimbursement for New Miami Open House, approve fee structure for of the annual inspection notification program, release one-year maintenance bond for Trails of Four Bridges 2F and 4, approve transfers and appropriations, approve 7 daycare contracts with Job and Family Services and under miscellaneous, approve reimbursement for internal relations team meeting, execute contract with ProSource Technologies for copier acquisition program, approve agreement with Mental Health Board, and approve Title 4D service contract for calendar year 06. Oh, and I do have, unless you want to do it separately, the Johnny Clark resolution.
No changes, I move to approve.
Second.
Moved and second. Take the vote.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
I know from the on the reimbursement for the New Miami Open House that Bob Leventry did an excellent job along with Donna Everson and lady from the USDA, I think.
Yes. Department.
They just did a great program, and with all the money that with the grants and different loans, we need to get that information out even better than Open House. I mean, there was a good 150 people there, but I think we'd like to ask the media to do a story on that, because we need to get that information out for the residents of New Miami so they know that there is help available to tap in. My comment on that. Past 9:30, I have a presentation on tax abatement agreements from Brian Coughlin. Brian?
Thanks, Greg. It'll be a short one. The Tax Incentive Review Council met on December 14th, and I wanted to summarize the recommendations. They reviewed 101 existing enterprise zone agreements. 61 were in compliance and were recommended to continue. 6 were not in compliance, and the recommendation was to send warning letters to these companies and to review them again closely in 2006. 7 agreements were terminated for not achieving employment, payroll, or investment goals. 7 agreements were modified. In most cases, these agreements were with companies that achieved significant employment, payroll, or investment goals but fell short in other areas. For example, Kohl's in Monroe thought they were going to create 900 jobs. They underestimated the productivity of the equipment that they purchased and only created 400 jobs. But 400 jobs in Monroe is a big deal, and we didn't want to discourage the company, so we recommended that continue. 20 agreements expired. The TIRC is also responsible for reviewing tax increment financing agreements and community reinvestment area agreements. The TIRC recommended that University Point and VOA agreements in Westchester and the Cincinnati Mills TIF agreements in Fairfield be continued. The TIRC also recommended that all 5 CRA agreements in Fairfield be continued. Lastly, I'd like to thank Jack Sibby for his work in computerizing all of the TIRC process. The members of the council were very pleased in how much the process was expedited this year under the new system that Jack implemented. That's all I have.
Brian, with the recommended for termination companies, that means that the tax that was abated is now due?
They were getting the tax break, and we've eliminated it because they just didn't come close to meeting any of the goals. Some of them had several years remaining. Some only had a couple years remaining. They did receive the benefit. There is no clawback provision in a lot of those early agreements, so we can't go back. The new agreement, even though the process is being phased out under the new tax reform, our agreements now do have clawback. So if anybody, you know, in the next 4 years as it is phased out, if we terminate, they owe
the full amount.
Yes.
You can reach back and say.
Yes. Yes, Mike.
Okay. Any other questions?
No. Of the 60 ones that were in compliance and recommended to continue, they were meeting their employment or?
A lot of them were exceeding. Were a couple where they fell a little bit short in one category, but we're way up in investment. And, you know, you just balance it off and you go, wow, these guys are doing a good job.
So by and large, the overall picture is that of the abatements that we've granted, there's fairly good compliance with the promises that were made to receive those abatements at the moment.
Plus, and Jack did a summary of this, the new investment, new jobs created are significantly above what the original agreements called for. So it's been a successful program.
Overall?
Yes.
So even though you had some that were out of compliance,
when you
put them all together and add up
it was a successful
jobs.
Program. It met or exceeded goals, and I think even though it is being phased out, it's been a successful program.
For the six that were not in compliance and recommended to continue with warning letters, how does that process work in terms of at what point do you pull the plug?
One of them had received a previous warning letter several years ago. They've been out of compliance. Frankly, they're done unless they meet it this year. I mean, we've been very tough this time around, and actually the recommendations from the TIRC Council were even tougher than we recommended. So nobody's sliding by anymore.
Yeah, I think that's important that we've had this discussion in the past, and the level of analysis that you've done, Brian, is good. I mean, you guys have done a good job.
It's ramped up.
Yeah, because I mean, years ago, this kind of was one of those things that kind of floated by, and I think the message to those businesses should be for those that meet their goals, we're grateful to them, and I think it might be useful for the commission to send a letter from us to thank them for generating the jobs and, you know, keeping the promises that they made.
Good example, Mike, is Dell. They were supposed to create 665 jobs over a three-year period. Well, this is a little more than a year, and they've created 1,000 jobs. And most of these are success stories. And I don't like the paperwork involved, but the job creation, the investment here has been terrific.
I think that it'd be good for us to let them know we appreciate what they've done and the contribution they're making to the community overall and the job market in particular.
I'll draft a letter for the Board of Commissioners' signature.
And for those that, for whatever reason, are unable to make the commitments that they made, remind them that these are these are trade-offs that, you know, we're abating taxes. We're giving them a break that homeowners don't get. And when homeowners are out of compliance, they always they face serious consequences all the way up to foreclosure.
Yes.
And I opt for a tough policy that, you know, we're willing to go the extra mile and extend these abatements to them, but we also expect them to meet their responsibilities as well.
So do we.
Unfortunately, the good news is there are very few that I think the message is getting out that that's an expectation, and there's a consequence for not. The seven terminations, these are folks that just didn't meet the and had been given warnings in the past, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good.
Mr. President, just want to commend you for the job that you do, Brian, Jack, and your staff, not just on this issue, but that you guys have really done an excellent job for Butler County.
Thank you.
Keeping us out of way ahead of the game, and we do appreciate it.
We're going to try to continue.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to echo those sentiments that Commissioner Furman said, and Jack, thank you. And also to add that I think that we should send a letter to all the members on the review committee thanking them for their time that they put forward with this activity.
Sure.
Yeah, what used to take a day was a few hours, and they were appreciative, as you might expect.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I need a resolution to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Anyone in the audience who would like to address the commission this time? Jennifer or Candace, do you have anything? Well, we're going to recess for a work session. Sorry. I was just hoping. No, I haven't.
I don't know if this is another one of those silly ideas or not, but.
And it's one of those legal or not legal.
We have, and I appreciate the work that Gary Sheets has done on this issue. As you recall, some time ago, we, or at least brought to the commission the discussion of what options, if any, we had to use the building code process to ensure that those who get building permits are operating in compliance with the laws of the state and the federal government, including but not limited to those laws that prohibit the employment of illegal aliens. And after a number of conversations and a lot of research on Gary's part, we've got some ideas here that I'd like to put in the process. When are we going to be doing the whole building code? We're going to be adopting the state code.
We can't do the state until it'll be in May, because we can't adopt it until they adopt it first.
Okay. Well, as soon as what I'd like to do is put the language that we've so far been able to develop in play, and I guess Bill would have a list of folks that would be the likely suspects or whatever to send it out,
send it
to the home builders and others for comments. But the bottom line is the building industry is one that we interact with frequently, and it also happens to be an industry where, at least allegedly, there's an awful lot of abuse with respect to the employment of illegal aliens. And they do these little tricks where they find one that's legal and they pay him in cash, and then he pulls the van up, and then they pass out or they pay him legitimately, and then they pass out cash to the other folks, and there's very little record keeping. And then when they're asked, gee, did you employ an illegal person, they just look at you, and of course not. We would never do anything like that. We just hire people to do that for us. And it's not fair. I was just with a local contractor yesterday. To his credit, works in compliance. He's in the landscape business and refuses to hire people who are illegal, undocumented, whatever you want to call them. And it's cost him lots of business because his competitors, it's not fair to the businesses that abide by the laws, because his competitors are able to put prices on the table and bids that he can't possibly meet because the subs aren't paying workers' comp, they're not paying the FICA taxes. It's just a cash economy. And in line with a number of strategies that we want to use to send a message, I would like this commission to begin reviewing this specific proposal, which would require that when someone applies for a building permit, that they have to sign a declaration at the front end that they will comply with all the laws of the state of Ohio and the federal government, including but not limited to, and then we cite the specific prohibition against in the employment of individuals who are not here legally, and then that it is their responsibility to ensure that the subcontractors that they use, if they choose to use any on their job, are also lawfully employed. And when they come to get their occupancy permit, they would have to certify that they have in fact complied with those laws. And that gives us two mechanisms for enforcement. First mechanism is if they knowingly certify or have not reasonably conducted their due diligence, they are subject to a criminal offense called falsification. If they certify that they've complied with the laws and it's determined that they kind of with a nod and a wink ignored them, then that exposes them to criminal charges. And that's where the problem is. These people are coming here to this country for jobs, and it is the employers that, and the reason this thing can't get resolved at the national level is you've got this strange alliance between labor and the chambers of commerce and the business groups of this country that are supporting policies, or at least blocking resolutions to policies that threaten the national interest. They threaten our national security. And it's wrong, and there are little that we can do, but what little is available for us to do can make a big difference. This is a particular industry where there are serious abuses, and I'd like to send this out to all the contractors, developers, builders, and that whole industry to let them know that we are going to do all that the law allows us to do to say we're holding you responsible. And for all of us, we know that they are violating, that many of them are violating these rules. They are doing it knowingly. I've had conversations with builders where they have looked at me when I've asked them the question, do you hire illegals? And they smile at me and say, of course not. But of course I can't account for all my subs, which tells me that they know exactly what's going on. It's doing it with their compliance and knowledge, and we can crack down on that and hold them responsible for it. And so the consequence would be exposure to criminal charges for falsification of documents filed, and secondly, we can fine them to the fullest extent permitted by law for each instance of non-compliance. And believe me, the builders that are out there that are in compliance will be helpful to us in letting us know about the ones that are not, because it is directly affecting the ones who are playing by the rules. It is making it difficult for them to compete. And this is something that, as we look at the revisions that we're planning to make already in the building code, I would like to use this tool to, at least in this segment, to do what we can and the law permits. We also, the third thing that in terms of a consequence is we would refer them to INS if we suspect that there is a violation, and there are serious federal consequences under the federal statutes. I think for each instance there are fines up to $10,000. What you need to do is create economic disincentives to break the law. If you create economic disincentives, right now the incentive is all to the person who wants to break the law, because there's no consequence and there's lots of rewards for them to avoid this prohibition against hiring illegals. And there are lots of builders out there who do play by the rules, and it's not fair to them. Nor is it to me. It's an assault against the very national security of this country, because the border problem is something that, if there were ever a failure of this administration and a failure of the Congress, it is a failure to secure the borders of this country. I have no problem with a guest worker program as long as we register them and know who they are. But I don't want, appear to be importing a lot of criminals that end up in our jails, and they're costing us this year, I think, close to $500,000. As we're going upstairs to talk about the justice system and the courts, one of the pressures that's being put on our budget is folks that are here that commit crimes that are not supposed to be here to begin with. We end up, our taxpayers end up having to support them. We can't get the INS to do their job. It's a mess. And we could do this piece. The third piece, I know former Commissioner Combs is working on some state legislation. I've asked the Attorney General, Mr. Petro, to look into, from his standpoint, RICO actions. There are strong powers invested in the Attorney General's office to not just the building industry. There's all kinds of other industries that that do this, but this is one we have direct authority over. I think the county auditor is working on a program that will go after on the vending license. Anyone conducting business has to have a vending license, and I know that the auditor is working on something on that piece of it. So I'd like to put this in the process for consideration, and hopefully you all will find some stuff here you can agree with, and we can at least do our piece.
Have you considered the possibility of taking that to state level, have them put that in theirs and send it down? Send it throughout the state?
Good idea. I think we ought to send it up. Are they still modifying theirs?
I don't know, but I can send it up to the state.
I think that's a good idea. Why don't we send it up? And if the commission wants to, I mean, if you guys would support that. I think it's something that they, I think it's... The state would be ideal, not in place of us, but if it's in the state code, I think that's something that would be even better. That way the playing field's level across the...
Mike, I support this, but I'm concerned about the execution of this, and maybe you can explain it to me, because I haven't seen the proposal.
but I'm thinking that, okay, so a builder comes in to get a permit, say I'm going to build on this lot. He signs a declaration saying that he's going to only hire people who are legally able to work. And then when he gets the occupancy, the final permit, he signs that everyone that has worked on this project has been legally able to work. What about, we're not getting into the inspection of whether they're complying with that. They may sign that piece of paper, but are you suggesting that our building department go out and check each one of the people that he has working for him?
Well, I think what you have is the what I always call the common sense rule. Just like we have now is if Bill gets a complaint that certain builders, I mean, he knows which ones he needs to watch for certain types of problems, and some are watched more closely than others because they've had a history of trying to take shortcuts. I think the idea here is to impose the obligation on them. I mean, this is not complicated, really, from an enforcement standpoint. Most businesses, if you work for them, you either get a 1040 or a 1099. I mean, you probably in your business give each of your employees gets a
You don't want to have document. To create a position that we have to fill.
No, and I don't want the building department. They're there to protect the safety of the building, so there's code. We may be moving them into labor enforcement laws away from their main objective and mission. And that's what I just don't know about your proposal, is that do they become labor inspectors also?
When the occasion calls for it, they basically, I mean, one of the things that the building department is there for is to see that the construction is done in accordance with the laws of the state of Ohio. And
with regard to the safety and well-being of the
foundation of the
building.
Yeah, but I'm saying that we should use that tool that is given to us, and I've had Gary look at this, and the things that we can require. It's not unreasonable to require someone who wants a building permit to say, I promise to abide by the laws of the state of Ohio and federal government.
I don't have any.
So that's number one. Number two is, it's not unreasonable at the end of the project to ask them to certify that they have done that which they promised when they got the permit. So now we come to the issue of, well, under what circumstances do you use an enforcement tool to go in and say, well, did you actually do what you said you did? It's just like being a policeman on patrol. You do not pull every car over that you pass just because they're using the roadways. So you don't have to go in and audit every builder. You simply go in where there's some reasonable basis to say, hey, I want to know, we've had a complaint or we have reason to believe. It could be random checks. It could be spot checks. If it ends up taking time and requiring more funds to do it, then let's just raise the building fees to cover the cost of those inspections. It doesn't have to be done by our building inspectors. It could be contract. There are all kinds of ways to enforce compliance, and I don't have a problem expanding that role in as much as we know what they're doing. We know what they're doing. Go to any building site. See the vans drive through. Go down on East Avenue and see the vans pull up and see everybody load in. I mean, this isn't stuff that you got to really look hard to find. So it's not going to be difficult to find those that are not in compliance. Now, the so-called, quote, inspection is fairly simple. If the state or whatever or whoever does it comes to your business and says, I want to see the 1099s or the 1040s or whatever they are for each of your employees, you've got that, don't you?
Yes, but
because you're an, you're a businessman.
I'm not sure if that should be the purview of our building department to look at those.
maybe, you know, when the, and I don't have any problem with the contractor or whoever signing things and saying, I'm going to be legal on this.
As long as we don't look at them to see if they were?
Well, I just think that it's taken away. I think there needs to be another mechanism to take it out of that department's hand. If we have a, you know, here is the hammer because they signed it. And if there's some suspicion, it needs to go someplace else to the state labor laws or the federal labor laws for them to INS to investigate. Our building department is stretched to the limits, and I don't think they, you know, the, there's some problems in that area right now.
That, well, if we start with the proposition that we're not doing any inspections now.
No, we're doing inspections.
No, I mean of this issue. If we start with the proposition, we're not checking this at all now. Okay? Won't cost us a whole lot to check one. So we've checked one more on this issue. In other words, the issue of are we going to, quote, take away from their main mission? Of course not. So, I mean, it comes down to the test of reasonableness. My theory on this is one of those deals that's what I call the one bullet in the gun theory. You can have a whole room full of crowded people, and all you have to, you don't have to have the gun fully loaded to control the room. All you need is one bullet, because nobody wants to be the first one to be shot. And what I'm saying is, by having the ability built into this to go into even just one builder that you know, or one person that's not in compliance, and say, this is not complicated, I want to see your 1040s and 1099s for every person that was on this job.
There again, I'm not sure if that's the purview of the building department.
I'm trying to the purview. It hasn't been. I'm trying to go outside the paradigm, saying no, it hasn't been, and that's why we have a marketplace where the laws are flaunted, and it's an assault against this country, and it's an assault against businessmen that do play by the rules and who are honest. Why should we create a building market where we reward the people who break the laws?
But there is the, you know, in the state and in the federal government, the Department of Wage and Hour people that go out and do inspections on businesses. It's not the health department that comes out and checks on the people's, you know, wages. It's that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to make an, you know, maybe we can have them sign this paper as a hammer that take it to the wage and hour people to say, hey, this is what we think that, you know, there's a person that signed this paper. We have reason to believe that he's violating the wage and hour agreements, and you need to inspect it.
Well,
table this and
yeah, maybe so. I can
have a work session.
No, that's what I'm proposing. Is I'm not asking us to vote on it today. I'm saying I want to give everybody time to think about it, because the questions that Greg is raising about how the enforcement piece of this, I don't want to do something, quote, symbolic. In other words, the enforcement piece of this, and Gary and I have talked about this, one of the outcomes will be, in fact, is to make those referrals, is to make the referral to the INS, is to make, because they have, that's their primary mission. But what I'm saying is, I don't want to say exclusively that we're going to give up our ability to make this inspection if we feel that there's probable cause or reason to believe that they're not in compliance. And this is an industry that is just absolutely, and I don't blame, let me make this clear, I don't blame somebody that comes into this country to get an opportunity for a job so they can support their family here or back home, wherever that is. I understand that. I admire the people that have the courage to do that. It's not, we don't have illegal aliens here because these folks that come in from other countries are bad people. We have a problem of illegal aliens because we have people in Washington and these other agencies you're talking about who don't have the guts and the courage to do what's right and protect our borders because of greed. It's because of greed. It's because of the almighty dollar. And it's a cancer that's going to tear this country apart. Last year, 3 million of them came in. And there's going to reach a tipping point where we can't handle, the economy can't handle anymore. I don't have a problem of a mechanism allowing those that have already made it here to register and to work legally. I don't have a problem with that. But it has to be coupled with an effective protection of our border. All we've got guarding the Canadian border are rabbits and squirrels. I mean, you could ship an entire fully armed army into this country. And it's I mean, as frankly, I don't care whose responsibility it is. What I know is the ones who do have responsibility aren't doing their job. So I believe when counties like ours say, we're going to put pressure on those of you who have primary responsibility to take care of this issue and have failed to, we're going to take the piece that we do have lawful authority to take, and we're going to use whatever leverage points we have in the process to do it. Now, it's going to make some people uncomfortable, and it's not going to be politically correct and all those sorts of things, because we know that this particular industry is absolutely eat up with illegal, undocumented, whatever word you want to use, people. And you can go to virtually any subdivision under construction in this county and see the vans. We talk about the transportation, that we don't have transportation, public transportation system in this county. My goodness, we ought to get those folks that are carrying these workers to these job sites. They'll help us out. Maybe they can help solve. Maybe they're doing a whole lot better job than the blast did. And they're out there every day running their routes.
Mike, I just want to say that, you know, I support the idea, but I want to see the details and how we enforce
there's
it.
Definitely merit on both sides. That's why we need a work session.
That's why, and that's why I brought it here today and said I don't want to vote.
Right.
We're going to be dealing with the building code. I want to have the type of discussion that you're raising on what is a fair and reasonable and effective enforcement mechanism. I want to pass it out to everybody effective. I want to give it to the home builders. I want to give it to the developers and say, here, give us your thoughts. What's a fair way of doing this? And that way, and when we, as we go through this code revision process that we're already doing, we can include addressing this issue, which I think will be an effective tool, at least in our piece of the world, to make a difference. And perhaps on the enforcement side, I know the auditor is going to start doing some things on the vending permits, and there's some collaborative things that can be done as well. So,
okay. Anything else brought before?
I do have. We have the Johnny Clark resolution. Mr. President, I have a resolution here that any of us that worked with Johnny knows what a wonderful person he was. And I think it's appropriate for our commission to officially recognize the contribution that he made to not just journalism, but to our community. Johnny Clark was just a decent and good human being. And he represented what the best of what journalism was and the best of what journalism can be, and did it for 50 years. And I have a resolution that recognizes the incredible life that this gentleman and our community had, and we were blessed to have him touch our lives, and the community was blessed to have the benefit of his work for so many years, because Johnny Clark was a good person and an incredible professional, committed to his profession, and it is for that reason that I move that we adopt this resolution and convey it to his family, expressing our condolences and deepest sympathy for the loss of this gentle little man who was a giant among his colleagues and a wonderful asset to our community.
Sorry. Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Galbad?
Yes. Anybody have anything else? We stand in recess for work session upstairs. Thank you.